Football on Off the Ball.
With Sky. Watch every UEFA Champions League and Europa League match live on BT Sport this season.
You're welcome back. That music means Mr. Pat Nevin is with us. Now, in advance of Spurs Manchester United, I think the week's focus generally across the football media had been on the imminent and distinct possibility of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer losing his job. There was an awareness, I would say. Nuno was struggling, 17 games into the job, though a win over Man City in the bag early on. Manager of the month in August, we generally assumed he would be okay or have time on his hands. Fast forward to the game. This extraordinary moment when Lucas Moura was substituted for Bergwijn, a like-for-like move, the entire stadium booed Nuno, and I think, Pat Nevin, a lot of us suddenly looked from Ole over to Nuno and said, oh, you're the one who's about to get sacked here. It's like this jolting moment. It's been a while since fans in stadium have hastened the demise of a manager. I mean, I think if that was an empty stadium yesterday, there's a good chance Nuno survives another couple of games.
Yeah, I would agree with that. There's a number of steps. They get fed up with the manager. They have a dig at the manager. They have a dig at some players. But the next step after that is they turn on the board. What are you doing? Why are you not changing it? And it's amazing how many times that the board realise, oh, we're next. And they make a decision then because they don't like getting that sort of stick. And when they'd so obviously turned on Nuno and decided that phrase, you don't know what you're doing, which I think was pretty harsh, but they absolutely felt that. Maybe it wasn't a huge surprise, but you're absolutely right. We were talking last week. I mean, Ollie was basically yesterday's news. He's gone. He's, you know, I wonder who will be the replacement. And the first name that was coming up was Antonio Conte. And then suddenly, I think that Antonio might not be going to Manchester, might be going to London. But it was an extraordinary change. In the midst of it all, how many times has Ole Gunnar Solskjaer done this? When you think about it now, he has been on the edge of a precipice time and again. And yet, within a few weeks, if you look at the league table just now, it's not beyond the bounds of possibility that Manchester United could beat Manchester City next week in the derby game. It's not beyond. It's, you know, maybe slightly unlikely, but not beyond. That would put Man United level with Man City in the league. And no one's shouting for Pep. And that's the madness of this game. And it's when you sometimes have to be a little bit more wise and look, you take a little beat, think about it for a while. Now, I still don't, I'm not convinced that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is going to turn Manchester United into a league-winning side. But you can't say it's complete failure if he manages to beat City and goes level in points with them. You know, 11 games into the season, which is a decent chunk of the season gone. They seem to be waving goodbye to the likes of Chelsea and Liverpool in the meantime. But, I mean, it's just incredible. It's just the madness of this game. And, of course, they made that tactical change against Spurs. And whether it was that moment of managerial genius, whether his players decided to get up for it for once, which they seemed to be, or whether they just came across a Spurs team who were absolutely not at it at all and didn't look as if they fancied it. And certainly, as was the same the week before, with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, the players weren't doing it for him. Well, it certainly looked like the players weren't doing it for Nuno in that game. And it's the madness of it. It can change so, so quickly. It's bizarre.
It sure is. No shot on target from a Spurs point of view in the Premier League for 2 hours and 16 minutes. Defeats to West Ham, United obviously, Palace was a bad one, Chelsea, Arsenal, would suggest something was building. But what do you think it was about the Bergwijn Lucas Moura substitution that proved such a lightning rod?
It might not have just been them. You know, that decision, you could have almost made any decision at that point in time and they would have turned on him. You look at it, you know, Harry moved to a different position or taken off. Well, it could mean anything. I think it was just building. It was just waiting to happen. Spurs fans may say in retrospect, no, we knew it was that specific change, but I'm not convinced it was that specific change. Yeah, sorry, but I have no idea what happened. It's Scotland's usually quite good and the weather's not even bad here.
It's bad here. It's miserable here, you should know.
In that case, it was your side. So now we're talking about Spurs there and the fact that what change that Nuno made. But I think it's been building for a while. And could have been absolutely any change. And they've looked at the team there and who's playing well. And he's, in simple terms, he's not getting the best out of that group of players. Maybe partly his fault, but if you're looking at Harry Kane in particular, I mean, he's not suddenly a terrible player, but you're not getting anywhere near what you were getting before from Harry Kane. So it's, and I was at their game recently against Newcastle, and there was a period they looked fabulous. So, but if you do it at home, and it's 3-0 at home, you know, and it's a complete submission, then the fans just don't take it.
Yeah. The Kane thing's fascinating. Being booed, you know, being roundly booed as well as that game continued. So this situation has not repaired itself. He's on thin ice with those fans, you know, despite his tweet and how much he was delighted to stay and all that stuff at the end of the summer. I guess there's no way of talking about his immediate future without bringing in Conte. Because if Kane starts playing well and starts scoring goals and kissing the badge, then all will be well again. Unless you think, regardless of who comes in, Kane is just done with this club.
Do you know one of the things in football, they talk about, you know, 1%, 2%, 5% extra makes all the difference. And it is the case that Harry has dropped at least that sort of percentage, at the very least that sort of percentage in the quality he's played. Now, he has had quiet times in the past, but that's definitely dropped. Can anyone else get it out of him? Can Conte get it out of him? Well, Conte could get it out of him, but can he get it out of him at Spurs? And that remains the question. It absolutely remains the question. I do honestly feel, I was surprised that they kept him. I was really surprised that they kept him on, because I knew there would be a drop, and I think everybody knew there would be a drop and expected some sort of drop. I'd be surprised if it really comes back to the Harry of old, unless he gets somewhere else, because he clearly wanted to go. He feels he's been cheated. He can't say that out loud. He needs to say the right things, because he's walking out in front of all those fans every week. And I'm not saying he's not trying. I'm definitely not saying he's not trying. But he feels as if he was cheated. He feels as if a promise was made to him, it was broken. And I know what it's like. I've been there as a player before. You know, you think, I'm doing everything right. I will continue to do everything right. And whatever the promises are with the club, even if they're not written on the contract, if you feel you have been let down and you have been swizzed, it doesn't go away. It absolutely doesn't go away. And it certainly led to me leaving two clubs in my career. And it wasn't even the fact that it was a particular financial burden or anything like that. It was just, actually, you lied to me.
Yes.
And from my perspective, you lied to me. And it's not the same anymore. And it just changes. Mm. It changes everything. And in the end, one of the clubs, I walked out and said, well, I don't want to play football anymore if I have to play with people like you. I was that infuriated about it. Now, I've got a wee tendency to be a bit earnest and a bit on my high horse in these sort of situations. And I'm sure Harry isn't daft enough to throw that sort of money away. But I do think he feels utterly cheated by this. And I kind of get where he's coming from.
Yeah, I think you're spot on there. And as much as he is trying, and I think he's trying, it's hard to park that anger, that sense of betrayal, and to be the best player that you can be. There's just something holding you back. So Conte then, that's where this gets really interesting. There's talk of an 18-month deal. Generally, he's very wary of arriving anywhere mid-season. The word was, well, he'd make an exception for Manchester United. Given that he had talks in the summer, and depends on which newspaper you read, he either walked away or they walked away. Like, I just happened to see The Guardian there, which reported Spurs having been put off by certain demands he had made. And maybe he walked away because he wasn't getting the insurances. It's probably two sides of the same coin. So I'm kind of surprised that they resumed talks and that they're going so well. Fabio Paratici is now in there and had been at Juventus. He wasn't there in the summer, so maybe he can, you know, charm Conte and give him certain assurances. Maybe that's the difference. But I don't know. If I was his advisor, I'd be saying Antonio. It's a terrible squad. 18 months. This Ole Gunnar Solskjaer thing. Yeah, it's really not. I just hang on a month or two. I really would before you come into Spurs.
There's a bit in me that as soon they moved really quickly and getting rid of Nuno, right? Yeah. Really quickly. Quicker than most of us expected, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes the reason for that is you know the man you want and he might just about to be snapped up. So from Spurs' position, that's what it kind of looks like. Or we better move now or we might not get Conte, who... if it is the man that they want to get. But I'm with you. When Mourinho went to Spurs, that was a stinking fit. That was an awful fit. And we all knew it was an awful fit. I don't think Conte is a good fit for that club. I just think, Chelsea fans, close your ears now, right? I actually really like Spurs. I've always liked a certain concept about them. Their fans love open football. They've always loved it. There's always been an expectation. Some clubs have got that. You know, they won't put up, they'd almost get fed up if they won things and played in a dour manner. They want a much more open, fluent kind of game of football, and that's when they're at their happiest. That is the core and the culture of the club. That's not Conte. It absolutely isn't Conte. It's very prescribed the way his teams play. And I'm not saying it's bad, and it's often very, very successful in the short term. And also, personality-wise, same as Mourinho. I mean, it's one of those ones, really. So the 18-month, I get that. I absolutely get that. Any more than that doesn't make a lot of sense. But whether he wants that, really, because as soon as you're saying 18 months, you're saying, right, that's how much we're going to pay you. They're not daft, these managers. You know, if you give me a 3-year, I might only do 18 months, but I'm going to get paid for the rest because you're going to get rid of me. So there's a number of things that are not working in Conte's favour. And if you remember the other thing, these guns for hire, like Conte and other big-name managers, they know other jobs will come up and other big jobs will come up. And his star is still quite high, very high, as a matter of fact. So is Spurs, in actual fact, a big enough club for him? Or could he actually, as you're in...
Ooh, the Wi-Fi. Killing us. We'll get Pat back up. While we're getting Pat, here's a clip I want to play you of Conte. This is him speaking to Thierry Henry. And this gives you a little sense of what Conte is bringing to the party and bringing to a dressing room when it comes to attitude. So here's Henri interviewing Conte relatively recently.
There's another thing that I have to say that I love with you. If a player doesn't do what you ask him to do for the team, he's out.
I always talk about education and respect. And I demand this. I give this, but I demand this. And if someone haven't the good attitude during the training session or good behaviors in different circumstances, I prefer to kill him and to earn. but I prefer to kill him and to earn 22 players. If the manager close the eyes and. He doesn't want to see the bad situation, you lose the changing room.
There we are, that's Conte. Pat Nevin's back with us. I know you probably didn't catch that clip. It was him talking to Henri where he said, and I don't even think with the language barrier, he did not mean it. He said, if a player has a bad attitude, I'd prefer to kill him than keep him. And if a manager ignores bad behaviours in a dressing room, he loses that dressing room. That dressing room is lost. And it's just a little insight into Conte, which we'll get onto in just a sec, because you know him well from Chelsea. But we lost you as you were saying that I was intimating regarding the bigger jobs.
I can't believe that's gone again.
Are you gone? Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Yeah, I can hear you.
We can hear you.
Oh, that's good. Okay, we'll carry on then. even if you don't have a video. So I should probably ought to dump that video. That would be a good idea.
Yeah, kill the video and it might...
kill the video. I've killed it.
Might make the Wi-Fi a bit better. So we'll get a nice photo of you up as you're talking.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, a number of things. You're intimating that an 18-month contract with Spurs, where they are just now, is he going to further the way he's perceived in football? Or is it going to have a negative effect? Because it's cumulative, these jobs. If it goes negatively, people think, oh, he's lost it now. You know, the Mourinho thing. And it's very hard to get it back. Moyes got it back. You know, he's got it back. But it took a while, didn't it? Mm. And it takes a while for these guys. Much, much better to get into a job where you can have an effect. That's why he doesn't like taking over during mid-season. Because you need to be able to control it the way you want from before the start of the season and get your people in. And the other thing about Conte, he will not come unless he gets exactly who he wants working with him. And I mean backing staff. And it's a big old backing staff that he's got as well. So there's a lot of things to be done there. And there are a lot of positives. It sounds like an easy and an obvious thing that just get Conte in. It's not that. It's absolutely not that with Conte. And by the way, I like the guy. I think he's a great manager. But don't be soft with him. And there's a number of players at Spurs, and I think they're not going to do particularly well under Antonio Conte. I can see that.
I wish they'd make that fly in the wall documentary against Spurs with Conte in. I think then we might see something. because to be fair with the Spurs dressing room, last point on Spurs, so Pochettino can't get a tune out of them for a while. Nuno goes in and they kind of, I mean, they throw him under the bus a little bit in terms of effort at times. Like, so for a while there now, there's been something a touch off.
I would agree completely with that. And it's hard to know exactly what it is. And sometimes it's just you're changing your manager too quickly, you know, and you don't actually give somebody the time to build something. But I don't think they've actually looked as if they've got it anywhere close to right since Poch left. Poch was the right fit for that club. I think it would be sensible for them to try and look around and get the right fit. And if that right fit's not going to get you winning things right away, stick with them. And somebody who's got, you know what Liverpool done with Klopp? They got the right person. And just said, right, okay, we'll give you time. You are a reflection of this club's personality and we can stick by you. And by the way, you can work well with the ownership, etc. as well. But it's so difficult to be able to be brave enough to do that. Look, they're not going to get relegated. They're not that sort of team. But if you give somebody a bit of time who's got the heart and soul of the club within their heart and soul and they're a good manager, it's probably better than diving in at somebody who's not a good fit. And that's generally what they've been doing.
We'll talk Manchester United next Monday because it's not like things have been sorted out there perfectly. This is a very much up in the air situation. Atalanta, Man City to come, this new formation. We might put a pin in that for a sec because we've talked a lot of United lately. On Man City and Liverpool, so to varying degrees, wobbles at the weekend. Man City beaten by Palace. Liverpool a 2-2 draw with Brighton. Brighton, by all accounts, really good value for that 2-2 draw. In fact, on XG, they were better than Liverpool. And then Man City nil, Palace 2. Vieira has kind of transformed, really, the type of team Palace are. But what of Man City losing 2-0 at home? That is eye-catching. What do you read into that?
Well, partially, if they wouldn't have gone down to 10 men, it probably wouldn't have happened to the same level. But that's to take nothing away from what Palace did. And you're absolutely right. The change in Palace has been incredible. And I have to say, I was one of the ones that was questioning it, whether it was a good idea. The amount of changes they made at the start of the season, personnel-wise, you just think, oh, surely not. That's, and a manager who hadn't done it to that level before, even though he was a great player, there was a big, big old question mark there. But I tell you what, he's answering them with bells on. He's fearless, and he's made his players fearless. And that's a very noticeable thing that he's changed in them. So well done him. City's a real shocker, though. I was at the City game over in Bruges. And okay, it was only Bruges. But they look like the real City. But in the Premier League, that just isn't. We've talked about it before. There's no easy ones. And if you're not up for it, and you've got maybe, you've got one player, you know, off the pitch, and you've got some of your best players, and let's be fair, Kevin De Bruyne has not hit it yet, has he? To the level that you're expecting it from him. Maybe it's no surprise, it happens. Remember, Salah had a dip. Harry Kane's having a dip. You know, Kevin De Bruyne's not anywhere near the player he was, but he will get it back. I expect it from all of them. They will have dips. They won't all have them at the same time. It just happens with the amount of football you're asking for all these very, very top players. And if you take some of De Bruyne not doing his very, very best in the game and then stick on the fact that you never got that centre forward, yes, it's still a mild surprise, but it's not a shock that there are a few trip-ups now and again. They really could have done with getting Kane. It would have made a massive difference. So they've got him out so many holes because they're having to adapt all the time. They're having to do the centre-forward thing, change it. You know, and I watched a variety of the players having a go at that position, and you know, some of them do well for a wee while. But that's different from someone who goes in there and almost week in, week out, you can just about depend on him, you know, scoring a goal. There's not really anyone like that in our team.
Yeah, he's chopping and changing there. He knows there's a problem. Palace, by the way, averaged 39.9% possession last season. Vieira has them up to 50.2% thus far this season. Incredible transformation. I'm curious.
I heard the players talking about it afterwards.
Yeah.
And they're saying exactly that. They're all saying he wants us to play. He wants us to be comfortable on the ball. He wants us to play at the back. He believes in us. And it's honestly, this is old stuff. This is very, very old stuff. See, if you don't believe that your players can play and tell them to lump it or get it in the box and all that sort of stuff and play it simple, they will not push on and try and be any better than that. But if you say to them, right, trust you, you're good players, I trust your abilities, they just grow. They become the best players that they possibly can. And there is no doubt in my mind that all the way through that team that Vieira's actually said that to them, and they've just blossomed. It's brilliant to see. And I have to say, totally surprising.
Mm. So I'll let you pick the last talking point. Liverpool and Brighton 2-2 and Chelsea 3-0 away to Newcastle minus Lukaku. Reece James is their top scorer, which is quite something. So Chelsea sitting pretty now all of a sudden.
There's some ridiculous stats about Chelsea going round at the moment, right? So like everybody scores. And out with strikers. Now, when I say strikers, I mean like Werner, Lukaku and Kai Havertz. 12 other players have scored in the league this season. It's only 11 games old. It is bizarre what they are doing. And Chilwell was hammering them in for fun for a few weeks there. So you overcover on that side. Well, that's a bad idea because Reece James just comes in on the other side.
Oh my God, the strikes, Reece James.
Yeah. And it's extraordinary to see that. And it's one of those things with Tuchel. You begin to wonder, is it genius or he just can't do anything wrong just now? He's putting midfields. There's a midfield out there that didn't have Kante and Kovacic and Mount available in the second half. And they were still brilliant. Mm. And you think, how on earth does that work? You know, it's absolutely incredible that he's getting so much out of that group. A part of it, I mean, there's lots of reasons for it. A lot of good players there. But in all honesty, I love Jorginho. You know, I've got a real thing. I think he's the most wonderful player. And I've never, ever wavered in that, even when he was getting dog's abuse from most of the pundits. I think he's fabulous because he controls games. And there's not that many chinkos around. And he is the best in the business just now. But the other one is actually Thiago Silva. Thiago Silva can step into that area. He never, ever, ever looks bothered. And, you know, the age he is just now, oh my God, I'd love to watch that guy week in, week out at his very, very best. So with two players around him, and Rudiger's the best out-and-out pure defender in the league, I think, they just don't lose goals. Is it 3 goals this season in the league? So say whatever you like about the rest of it. If you're not losing goals, you've got some chance to go and win things. So at the moment, they look bordering on unstoppable. And this is a team, if you look around the league, we've got a whole bunch of players that are out playing for other teams, and they're all half of their best players as well. It's an absolutely extraordinary situation they put themselves in. And I'm going to the game tomorrow. I'm covering the game tomorrow against Malmo, and it's one of those classic ones. I don't know who is going to play, and I don't care.
Yeah,
I don't think it matters.
They'll be okay. Listen, we got there. Thanks, Emil.
Yep, sorry about the breakups.
Not at all. Cheers. Pat Nevin there with us. Football on Off the Ball brought to you by Sky. All the football you love in one place across Sky Sports, BT Sport and Premier Sports. We will, by the way, have Stewie Byrne and Gab Marcotti on the football show after 9.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Sky. Watch every UEFA Champions League and Europa League match live on BT Sport this season.
Now, you're very welcome back. Alex Iwobi has pulled one back for Everton, so it's 2-1 Wolves with about 15 minutes to play. Very happy to bring in Gab Marcotti, who joins us on the line. Hey, Gab, how's things?
Great to be with you guys. Thanks for having me.
No, likewise. Last time I spoke to you, it was in the aftermath of the Euros final and Wembley Gate, and you pretty much went viral around these parts for a couple of days afterwards.
Well, I can't promise anything like that this time around, but I will happily share my views.
Well, unless you're a big Nuno fan and you think this is all a disgrace, 10 games in, 10 Premier League games in, I mean, that is quick. I know it wasn't working out, but that is quick, is it not?
Look, I wrote this today in my ESPN column. Like, sometimes more than one thing can be true, right? So it can be true that Nuno was the wrong man for the job, that he didn't fit, that Nuno without George Mendes is a little bit like Andrew Ridgeley without George Michael, which I thought was kind of a clever line. But it can also be true that, you know, this is a club that made a ton of mistakes. Jose Mourinho was sacked in late April. It took them, what, more than 2 months to find a replacement or to appoint a replacement. It's true that this is a poorly assorted team. It's true that he was working with a new director of football. It's true you didn't have time to prepare. It's true that the whole Harry Kane fiasco kind of really screwed him up too. So all these things are true, but it doesn't change the fact that, you know, I think it was a wrong appointment.
Going to be interesting to see how this Harry Kane fiasco resolves itself, by the way.
Yeah, look, I think it's interesting because I was told that just about everybody who interviewed for the or who's talked to Spurs about the job in the summer was told in no uncertain terms by Daniel Levy, no, Kane is staying, and obviously ended up staying. However, I wonder in the summer, you know, what happens? Does, obviously Kane's a great player, but given that Spurs do not have unlimited funds, if you're Conte, if you're going to have to do major surgery to this team, might you rather have, you know, that 120 million, assuming somebody's still willing to give you 120 million for Harry Kane, who turns 29 next summer, would you rather have that to go and spend in the squad and bring in three or four players? Or would you rather have a hugely motivated Harry Kane, assuming you can hugely motivate him to want to stay? I think that's going to be really one of the key questions that's going to determine how this thing pans out.
Let's talk Conte then. I'm interested in your thoughts on Antonio Conte. So, for instance, he has been described in various quarters and maybe more so in connection with the Manchester United job, which we thought maybe was the more likely one until recently. But he had been described as difficult, as abrasive, words like that. Is that more to do with those at board level than leaving broken dressing rooms behind Alan Mourinho? Or can he scorch a dressing room too?
Well, it's funny, difficult, abrasive. Wait, isn't that Sir Alex Ferguson? But yes, I could resist. I think his record is there for all to see, right? There are parallels with Mourinho. I think, if anything, I think Conte is even more direct than Mourinho. You know, Conte left Inter because he was told that there'd be a whole bunch of money to invest. And then he found out after winning the title that, you know, they were going to sell two of his three best players. Conte left Chelsea because he wanted a whole bunch of new players and he thought Roman Abramovich is a billionaire, so he should go and spend that money. Conte left Juventus for pretty much the same reason. You remember his quote about the, he's being expected to take you out to dinner in a 100-euro plate restaurant with 10 euros in his pocket. So there's no question that he will always push for more spending and more resources and for things to be his way and so on. But there's also no question that when he gets those resources, he delivers. And it's weird because, you know, resources aren't really a problem at Manchester United. You know, I'm not saying he'd need to spend billions and billions, but, you know, if there is a team where he could go in and they could bring in more good players and they have the money to do that, it's Manchester United. It's not Tottenham, no. From what we know of the club and the club accounts.
That's why this does seem like an odd fit, and not least with the Manchester United job potentially on the horizon, like really potentially on the horizon, that he's gone in at Tottenham. I mean, it feels not dissimilar to Mourinho. You know, that was just a marriage doomed from the off, given Levy and given Mourinho's personality. And now here we are with Conte after talks in the summer broke down, seemingly over demands he had made. Now, I doubt his demands have softened overly or his standards have dropped. So that brings in Fabio Paratici. Excuse my pronunciation. So give it to me again.
Paratici.
Beautiful. I'm not going to repeat that. I'm going to call him Fabio for the rest of this call, because saying it badly to you is just more than I can bear. So he was an Italian footballer, for people unfamiliar with him, lower divisions, retired in 04, age 31. He had played for 12 different clubs. Head of scouting, Sampdoria, Giuseppe Morata's right-hand man. He was there a long time. He moved in 2010 to Juventus and was made head of technical affairs and sporting director. Obviously came into contact with Conte and worked closely with him then. And as of May 2021, arrived at Spurs. So he is the managing director of football. He's the significant difference here in the negotiations with Conte in the summertime and now. So what's this guy about, and what might he be doing to sway Conte, do you think?
Well, obviously he figures Conte is a very, very good coach. And obviously in that sense, it would make sense, because while it's true that Conte has done very well when he's had tremendous resources and he's been able to spend money, but the guy's really good at what he does. He did very well in his first season at Juventus when he had a bunch of players that didn't fit his system at all and players he didn't want, like Andrea Pirlo in 2010. He didn't want Pirlo. Pirlo rocks up and he completely changed his system, extended Pirlo's career, and they were very, very successful together. Equally in 2016, you know, he decided to, or actually, I guess in 2014, after leaving Juventus, he decided to go and take the Italy job, despite the fact that this was probably the least talented Italy side in 60 years. And he worked with some really, really ordinary players. And, you know, he got them to the quarterfinals at the Euros. They played great football. They ended up losing on penalties to Germany, but for my money, outplaying them. So, you know, from Paratici's perspective, it totally makes sense. This is an exceptional manager, you know, on the pitch in terms of actually coaching. And that's what he wants to bring in. I think, and the two had a good relationship when he was at Juve. Now, I think it's also significant, though, that Paratici left Juve, not under a cloud, but just from his own sort of sporting director sense. You know, Juventus made a bunch of poor decisions over the last 3 or 4 years, both in terms of signing players, in terms of appointing coaches as well. And so I think the question then becomes how much a part of it was Paratici, and can this time around be different?
Okay. And when you say how much a part of it, do you mean as in how much of the blame does he deserve type thing?
Yeah. I mean, look, this is more, I guess, about Paratici than it is about Conte, although Conte's always had, you know, kind of a pretty singular relationship with his directors of football, because, you know, he's going to look at Juve's squad, right? And he's going to see, okay, this guy's not good enough. This guy's good, but he doesn't fit my system. Mm-hmm. This guy's out of contract. How do I fix this? And he's going to go to Paratici and say, fetch me this guy, that guy, and that guy. And Levy's going to say, okay, you know, this is the budget that we have to work with. And it's going to be that creative tension that's going to make this work or not work, as the case may be. And the reality is Paratici made some really bad calls when he was at Juve. Aaron Ramsey comes to mind. Adrian Rabiot, probably not great. Emre Can, these free transfers that aren't really free because you completely overpay for somebody. You know, those are some of the moves that he was known for. But the difficult thing is at a club like Juve is to say, all right, well, how much of it was Paratici? How much of it was other people around him making those decisions? There's no question that I think if Conte's going to work, unless, you know, Levy finds hundreds of millions under the sofa that he's happy to go and part with, for this to work, they have to be very, very smart in the way they operate in the transfer market. That's going to be, I think, absolutely critical. And so Paratici is going to be a big, big part of that.
Mm. I guess you, by talking about, you know, the Pirlo example and the Italian Euros example, have highlighted maybe a key difference with Mourinho and Conte at their respective stages of their career. I think Mourinho's tolerance and patience for average players or misfits or, you know, square pegs and round holes was fairly limited, whereas Conte, it does seem, really can get great performances from players when other managers have failed to do so at times. So you mentioned Pirlo, really interesting. I guess Pogba, you'd have to say, played his best club football under Conte. You could say similar things about Lukaku, about Ashley Young, hell, about Alexis Sanchez to an extent, you know. So he does seem to have some kind of a touch here with, I mean, I think with players.
They're slightly different situations.
Sure.
I mean, Pogba he was a young player. He was a phenomenal talent, and I think still is a phenomenal talent. But other players, you know, he had a tremendously beneficial effect on Lukaku, you know.
Hmm.
He trusted Lukaku to be, among other things, you know, look, you know, you're not just a back to goal, big burly center forward. You're gonna play me. I'm gonna play you in a two. We're gonna use you in different ways. And Lukaku loved it because he's an intelligent guy, and the two were in sync. So Conte, I think, definitely has a knack to do that. Now, is he gonna turn Eric Dier into Franz Beckenbauer? I don't think so. I think that's even beyond his powers. But I think part of it is, you know, if Spurs and Conte have been honest with each other, part of it is going to be, look, we have a lot of guys here who, you know, I'm thinking of Ndombele, I'm thinking of Dele Alli, who we think should be good, who were once good. Can you make it work? Can you make these guys better? Can you work with them? Can you help Kane get back to where, you know, he was mentally 18 months ago? It's got to be stuff like that. And to be fair to Conte, as you said, he's done things like that in the past. He's gotten it to work.
It's going to be interesting because there does seem to be a slightly toxic element to the Spurs dressing room. You know, Pochettino tried and failed towards the end to get something out of them. Mourinho couldn't get anything going really at any stage. And now Nuno here is, and you know, he could feel slightly thrown under the bus by some of these players. And just last week, Nuno, and this is early in the tenure to be questioning the players, but he was saying, look, certain players in this squad are just not being professional enough in their attitude, in their application. You, kind of alarm bells are ringing when he's saying that so early on. So, look, that suggests the kind of a dressing room that is going to be rudely awoken here by Conte. So his man management is direct. I think we can put it that way, right?
It's definitely direct. And with Conte, there's definitely an arc, right? What happens is Conte's an absolute workaholic.
Right.
I know we say that about every manager. It's like, ooh, his attention to detail is second to none. but you know, this guy really, really lives it. You know, I don't think he has any interests in life whatsoever outside of his family and coaching and working football. When he came to Chelsea, he basically started taking calls from players at all hours of the day and night, because he wanted to go and convince them. You know, he very famously spoke to Thibaut Courtois, who had a difficult time, and, you know, talked to him and said, whatever you need, here's my number, call me whenever, blah, 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 let's talk. I mean, you know, and some players like that. Other players are like, okay, that's enough, get away from me, I see enough of you, I'll do what you say, right? Mm. So he's going to throw himself into that. And then it's going to be a question of how the players respond to it. Generally, players respond very well to it. And there's an arc. What often happens is by year two or year three, this certainly happened at Juventus, the players are like, okay, this dude is too intense, too driven, too exhausting, too over the top, and they tend to get tired of him. That's the conventional wisdom of why he left Juventus. I think there was sense of that. There was a sense that that was happening in his second season at Chelsea as well. You remember he fell out with the club. There was a Diego Costa incident. Mm. You know, at Inter, and again, we look at the past, but we can't forget that sometimes people grow up and evolve and they become different people. At Inter, you know, he was actually better in his second season. The players didn't mind him, you know, so maybe he has either mellowed or found the right balance a little bit better. But that's got to be something, right? Because look at this. We all assume he's going to play three at the back, which may or may not be true because, you know, he has played different systems, but that's the system he played at Chelsea and at Inter. And man, you look at this, who's good enough to fit this system, right? Hugo Lloris is out of contract in the summer, so they have to get a goalkeeper. Emerson and Reguilon, whatever. Yeah, I guess they can play as wingbacks. It's probably more natural wingbacks. Center backs, you need at least five viable center backs if you're going to play three at the back all season long. As far as I see it, they have Romero. Okay, fine. Maybe you can salvage something with Davinson Sanchez. But then you get into Joe Roden, Tanganga, Dyer. Come on, man. And then, you know, midfield again. Højbjerg, fine. He hasn't been great this season. He's not going to screw things up.
Mm.
But the rest, either you salvage Ali and Ndombele, or you're in like Winks and Skip territory. Mm. You know, and further up the pitch, you know, yeah, what's Kane going to be like? You play Kane with Son. What do you do with all those excess wingers that you've accumulated as well? Because if he plays that 3-5-2, there's no natural role for wingers, right? So, you know, Brian Heal, obviously Bergwijn, who hasn't been terrible. How do all these pieces fit together? I generally don't know. But it seems obvious to me they're going to have to do a fair amount of wheeling and dealing. You know, whether Kane stays or goes.
Mm. God, that's going to be interesting. I'm looking forward to this now. Only an 18-month contract. I guess, final question, do you think he's going to be a success? Because his record suggests, how can he be anything but?
I think there's stuff that we still don't know, right? So it's not official yet. Hasn't been appointed. We've all been told 18-month contract. That's one of the things. That's another one of the things that doesn't really make sense to me. You know, if you're Conte, why would you take an 18-month deal? Unless you're so confident in your ability and you're betting on yourself so much, you say, you know what? I'm going to turn this around in 18 months. We'll be doing so well that I want an 18-month deal, because that way, you know, when United or Real Madrid or whoever come calling, I'll be ready to go. There won't be any compensation or whatever. I was thinking about that. I'm just thinking, what other possible reason could he have accepted an 18-month contract? Because there's this vision, and it's a vision which to me is absolutely stupid, but it seems to be like the way a lot of football folk think, although Levy does march his own tune. Do you remember when, you know, when Solskjaer was initially appointed as an interim manager, and then they're like, oh, we better give him a new contract. And I'm like, okay, he hasn't proven anything. Give him a one-year deal, a two-year deal. No, we better be a three-year deal, and let's give him this massive pay rise to make him one of the five highest paid managers in the Premier League, because he's a United manager. Otherwise, it's going to undermine his authority. It's weird. Contract length, Conte doesn't care about that. I'm not even sure he cares about money. He's willing to back himself, which I find absolutely fascinating and a big part of the story.
Yeah, great. Gav, that was brilliant. Even if for nothing else, your saying of the word dire was a personal highlight for me, but it was good all the way through. Thanks so much.
No problem, boys.
Cheers.
Take care.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Sky. Watch every UEFA Champions League and Europa League match live on BT Sport this season.
Shamrock Rovers won the title on Friday night, a 3-0 win over Finn Harps. Their 19th League of Ireland title, their second in a row. In a moment, we'll chat to Stewie Byrne. First, here's their manager, Stephen Bradley. He was talking to Shamrock Rovers TV. And obviously, so Rovers won last year in that abbreviated pandemic hit season. And now here they are, second title in a row. Big achievement.
Yeah, look, I think last year we would have won the league. If no matter how many games we played, we were in a flow. And the players were really in tough form. We lost some key players, and as a bit trying to replace that as a group. And it took us, I was worried about the start of the season, because you're bringing new players to help you play, and you've lost 35 goals from the team, Aaron and Jack. And we knew we had to replace that, and we replaced that as the season went on. And whatever the game threw up throughout the season, whether it was a good game, a second ball game, or a scrappy game, we more times than not, we came out on top.
As you said a moment ago, we didn't get to celebrate in front of our fans, in front of the players' families last year. It's behind closed doors. So the players and yourself, you remember this night for a long time, won't you?
Oh, these are memories that live with you forever. I said to the players during the week, you have a chance to win a league in Tallaght Stadium, the first Shamrock Rovers team to do that, in front of your own fans and family. That's something that can never be taken away from you, and it's something in 20, 30, 40 years time you'll always remember. They're special nights, and that was our talk all during the week. Let's make sure we can celebrate this with our fans.
There you are, Stephen Bradley. Obviously very happy, and amazing scenes on Friday night. Very happy to bring in as well Stewie Byrne. Hi, Stewie.
Hey, Joe. How are you?
Yeah, very well. So, well, I guess you start first and foremost with the fact that they've wrapped up this title with three games to go. They are more than deserving winners, more than worthy winners of this title. They're the best team in the country.
Yeah, quite considerably so as well. Most consistent team in the country. Done their stuff right on the pitch and off the pitch. And it's increasingly looking like now that those clubs that are, you know, have got their house in order with regards the infrastructure, the resources they have at their disposal, you know, all that hard work that they've done. I would say since I played, Joe, since 2003, when the club went into examinership and was staring down the barrel of a gun, came out of that period. And I know they had a successful couple of years under Michael O'Neill. 2010, 2011, but you can't help but feel all the hard work that they've put in almost nearly 20 years now is really coming to fruition. They look like a proper football club. They've got everything. They tick all the boxes. No huge concerns that we can see from the outside. And when you look, especially when you look at the difficulties that some of the other clubs are having, whether it be finances or their grounds or whatever the case may be, Rovers are now in a position to really push forward. And it was, you know, it's funny that Stephen even mentioned there in his his press conference talking about the players that they lost at the start of the season. He was saying he was worried at the start of the season. He never said that publicly. Never said it publicly. And I think that's something he's done quite well this year. He's never used it as an excuse. So it's, I would always be critical of managers that start a season off with excuses. You know, he never looked for that. And I think it's important because the players never bought into that. And as a group, as a team, they needed to fix those issues internally. Where's the goals going to come from? How are we going to replace Jack Bourne, Aaron McAniff? Well, we're just going to have to do it together. We're all going to have to row in. People are going to have to step up. And it was a difficult first couple of months for them, Joe. I particularly think back to a four-week period in April where they picked up three wins out of four. They drew one, they won three, okay? 10 points out of 12 they picked up. But three of those wins were literally last-minute winners, even in one game, last-second winners. So they effectively turned 4 points into 10. And from that period onwards, they went on the best run of the season. So that was really their, that was really the period in the season where it could have all went wrong. But they dug in, and they've been the most consistent team and fully deserving of the league title.
Yeah, 19 points from 9 games this season in which they trailed. So 19 points from 9 games where they were behind. St. Pat's twice, Longford Town 3 times, Drogheda, Sligo, all stung at the death by Rovers. And I guess that speaks of character as well as quality. So they had that about them that they could routinely come back when required. So when you talk about the departures there at Byrne and McAniff, and we heard Stephen Bradley reference them and reference 35 goals lost, Danny Mandreau went a long way towards filling that gap and came, you know, arrived at the club under pressure to deliver. So talk to us about him and his season, Stewie.
I'd agree with that, actually. Yeah, a very difficult period from last year. For whatever reason, I don't know the reason. I can only think from looking at the outside, just things didn't go right at Bowes. And I would imagine personally, and his development, he's still a very young man. He's still only, he's obviously 20, 21 years of age, still very young, and he's developing all the time. So I think he came into the Rover squad this year with a bit of pressure under his on his shoulders. Hadn't played last year that much for Bowes. Things didn't go quite well.
Do we know why was Chewy last year, by the way?
I think there was just a personal disagreement between Keith Long and himself. And, right. You know, look, it happens. What I'd say, whether it's the player's fault, maybe he wasn't applying himself the way he should as a professional. I don't know. I genuinely don't know. But look, for whatever reason, you have to be doing an awful lot wrong to be not playing Joe. So I don't know whether he took it on himself personally, said, you know what, maybe I need to get stuck in here. And he did. And look, let's talk about it this year and credit to him. And there was times this year he took a bit of stick in the Bowes game, a lot of personal stuff thrown at him. And he had to deal with it all, like, you know. But when you look at his return, I think it was 12 league goals this year. Stephen Bradley was mentioned the other night that his goal for the season was 15 league goals. So he's on target to get that. I know players very much talk about goals and targets, and so that's obviously helped him as a player. And of course, getting into the, he still has very much has the attention of Stephen Kenny. He's gotten into the Ireland squad, so that helps the player with his own confidence and his own inner belief. But he's I remember seeing him at the start of the season, Joe, first game of the season, Pats were playing Rovers in Talla. This was the first game, drew 1-1. Pats were very good in the game, really put it up to Rovers. And he played, Danny Mandroy played left of a front three, and he struggled in the game, really struggled. Wasn't able to get his defensive side of his game right, and he just, he didn't look right. But to look at him now, and you know, looks like he's taken on board what's been asked of him at Shamrock Rovers, and Stephen Bradley may well have helped him as a manager, because Stephen would be very, he's not a roar and a shouter, he wouldn't be too critical, he'd be a different style of manager, and it looks to me like his management style has certainly suited Danny Mandroyo, and they needed somebody. Rovers definitely needed somebody of quality to be able to produce you know, goals or assists, set pieces. He's done it all. You know, even when we speak about some of those games where Rovers had picked up last minute winners, I think it was the draw of the game back in April where he got a last minute header. Like, you know, so they needed him at stages to really come up with the goods, and he's done so. But I'd love to see, I think he's got loads in the tank. Definitely think he's got loads in the tank. Looking at his interview after the game, that was his first league medal. And when you look at the game the other night, he was really at it. Like, you know, of all the players, Rovers weren't brilliant, but he was at it. You know, he picked up two goals, got man of the match, and kind of summed up by his post-match interview. He was thrilled. He was delighted. You could see there was a little bit of relief there. He looked a lot very relaxed, delighted with himself. But I think there's loads in him. I think there's loads of potential in him. I'd love to see him kick on from here.
I think it was put to Stephen Bradley in the press conference that no Rovers player had won a Player of the Month across the season. And are they underappreciated? And maybe they didn't get the credit they deserved for their league win last year as well. Now, he kicked the touch and that said, look, that doesn't matter. Players have created history. Other people can have their opinion. It doesn't matter to us. Is there something in that question, though? Are they lacking in the respect or love they might deserve, Stewie? Or what's your reading that?
I think you'll always I mean, this is as old as time, this this stuff. I used to always say this as well as a player, like anytime we ever won a league, you always feel like you don't get the credit you deserve.
There's some good old League of Ireland begrudgery going on here.
It's siege mentality, Joe. It helps. It kind of helps.
So they didn't get a single Player of the Month in this league winning season.
I think he's justified in that criticism. Like, I wouldn't lead too much into those Player of the Month. I think they're picked by the reporters.
Well, you know yourself.
They don't know what they're talking about, those reporters. I tell you what, Joe, me and you should pick the Player of the Month every month next year.
I bow to your knowledge, as ever.
Yeah. I'm sure you'll be way ahead of me, but I think he's justified. But I think that sort of siege mentality, it helps if you can sort of direct it in the right way, okay, you know. And in all the teams I played under, you know, there wasn't a manager that didn't try to leverage that whole thing, like, you know. And what's against them? Look, you need it. You need to, you need that hunger and that drive. You know, you need to be criticised. It helps. You know, you need pressure, Joe. You know, pressure is probably. I wrote my column there last Friday. I think pressure is the difference between being an average player and a really good player.
Right.
But it works. You need to be under pressure, you know. And so therefore, you know, you can't have positive without the negatives. And I'm trying to all the cliches here, but I think that's helped Rovers maybe get through what was a difficult period for them. And that difficult period, I would have been end of March, April, early May. But I think it's justified. I think I certainly think Androyo certainly was justified in winning a Player of the Month award at some stage this year, at least.
Yeah, well, I guess ultimately not that important either. So with a view to next season, Stephen Bradley was talking about the challenges ahead. He said Derry are going to invest heavily. There's Dundalk's takeover. Pats will go again. I don't think Sligo are a million miles away. I've said that a few times. To what extent do you make Rovers strong favourites to kick on again next year, to do a three in a row? You've talked about the solid foundations at the club. How far ahead of the rest are they?
On the pitch, not a million miles ahead on the pitch, but off the pitch, way ahead. And that means that I think it's in their hands, Joe. So they look at next season and what I hope doesn't happen is that they will look at the opposition and they will say, yeah, they're here, Sligo Rovers, they're here, so we just need to go there. In other words, we just need to go a little bit above them and we'll go again. That's a dangerous world to get into, I feel. I think Rovers should be looking at Europe. I think they're in a great position to have a right crack at Europe again. They've won the league, they're going to get the Champions route now again next year, and we've seen that's a huge benefit to Irish clubs, especially now when you consider the third tiered competition in Europe, the conference, European Conference League, and the money involved there. So Rovers will get a crack at the Champions League, and if that doesn't go well, then they'll have other options. I'd love to see them get in two or three players of real quality. I still think they need to possibly replace, you know, when you lose Jack Bourne, Aaron McAniff, I think in Danny Mandroyo and Richie Towell, they have ample replacements. I think Mandroyo is definitely capable of going to another level. The worry would be there is if he goes away. Hopefully he doesn't. I'd love to see him spend another year at Shamrock Rovers and go for Europe again. I think they need top. They've lost Scales. They need a top quality defender, and they really need a top quality number 10.
Okay.
Need somebody up front capable of getting goals, assists. That real. I'd love to see somebody coming from Europe. I don't mean to speak down of the. I don't mean to speak down of the quality available in Ireland, but I'm talking top-notch standard here. I think that's a player, bring a player in of real caliber that the others can learn from Joe. I experienced it myself as a player with Joseph Ndo, Alan Moore coming into my team in 04, in Wesley Houlihan as well, like, you know, and it's just they're the players you need to kind of go to a different level.
Yeah. When you say they're way ahead of everybody off the pitch, so there's certain things that we'd all be aware of. The stadium, it's great, it's modern. I mean, even see when the Republic of Ireland women's team play there, it's a great venue there, and you know, so that box is ticked, that's in great shape. You think of the academy, somebody like Bazunu's come through there. It's wonderful and hilarious that Man City still have to pay a six-figure sum every time he plays for Ireland. So the academy structure seems to be sound. You see someone like Dermot Desmond investing in the club to the tune of $2 million for 25% stake. I'm sure he's not investing for no bad reasons. He's obviously spotted a real opportunity there. So all of that stuff we're all kind of aware of floating around. Are there any specifics that you would look at when it comes to Rovers and say, it's there and there off the pitch that they're the envy of the rest of the league in particular?
Yes, training ground, Joe. Really? They're day to day. Right. They own their own training ground. So they're like, I can't tell you the difference it makes as a player to just have your day-to-day at a level that's way above everybody else. You feel like a professional football player, you know, and you want to improve, you want to get better. How do I describe it? There's a little bit of an ego attached to it as well. Yeah. Like, you know, you have to have an ego to be a top player. You just do.
Yeah.
It's that simple. You have to know how to control it, but you have to have one. It's as simple as that. And, you know, you have to have that bit of a swagger about you. So turning up every day, feeling like you're a top-class footballer goes a huge way to playing like a top-class footballer. They've got that. Like, so they have that real sense. Like, one of the biggest criticisms of the game here is that it's not an industry the way it is in other countries, okay? But when you're at Rovers, I think you feel like you're, you know, this is... it feels different, you know, and I'm not belittling what everybody else is doing. Other clubs are getting there. Bows are on their way. Pats, you know, have a good system in place, but Rovers, it's in place, and it's been in place for a few years now. And there's this, you know, they do all sorts of stuff around the match days up in Tallaght Stadium, where they invite all previous players to speak, and there's a real sense of a proper football club about the whole place, and that just feeds through the blood of the club. And like I said, they ticked all the boxes, Joe. There's nothing left, from what I can see, for them to add to the club other than to really start trying to get in, you know, year on year, top quality players, try and go, you know, just try and go again and go again. Europe is the thing for them.
So they've done it the right way. The foundations are in place. This isn't a side where they've just expensively assembled a first team. They've built a club.
Yeah, absolutely. Europe is the thing. They're now in place, and they're attractive to top players, Joe. Attractive to top players. The Dundalk thing is a good example. I think they struggle to attract top players there because of the ground. Doesn't look right. Doesn't, you know, all the success in Europe, but under Peak Six failed to really develop the ground, even though they did do work on the training facility, which is excellent, but there's gaps there and there's holes. And if you want to attract top players in, or a better caliber of player, you know, you need to tick the boxes, and they tick the boxes.
Okay. Stewie, great to have you on. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Joe.
Stu Byrne, thanks a million.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Sky. Watch every UEFA Champions League and Europa League match live on BT Sport this season.